For those of you visiting with us, we've been going through sort of a travelogue, if you like, of the early church. We've been stopping at different places, and today is our second to last stop. Next week will be the last one. Today we're visiting Troas. Troas is the place. The story goes that there was a small rural Baptist church that experienced a rather common occurrence in the wintertime. And that was a severe snowstorm that had socked in that particular community, preventing most of the congregation from attending morning worship. The minister was there because he lived right next door in the manse. And then at 5 minutes after 11 a.m., an old farmer who lived nearby dragged himself into the church. However, no one else came, even by 11:20. The minister said to the farmer, "Shall we cancel the service, Bill?" The farmer replied, "I don't know about you, but I suppose if I went out at feeding time to feed my cows and only one cow showed up, I'd feed it." "Right you are," the minister said, and so they held a regular service. They sang every verse of every hymn, took up the collection, prayed, everything you would do in a normal every Sunday service, just the two of them. When it came time for the sermon, the minister gave a real strong and loud message. He went on for 25 minutes, then 40 minutes, and then almost an hour. When he had finished, the minister said a closing prayer and then came down to greet the farmer. "Well, we had our own service, Bill, just the two of us." "We sure did, Pastor," said the farmer. "But you know, if I went out to feed my cows with a whole load of hay and only one cow showed up, I'd feed it, but I sure wouldn't give it the whole load." Nothing terrifies a congregation more than a preacher who gives more than ample sermons time-wise week after week. To prove my point, I was remembering a story, a funny moment in my life, when one of my former parishioners some years back was meeting with some other folks from the church for coffee in the mall, and I joined them. And I mentioned in passing that the battery on my watch had run out. And without missing a beat, he said, "I'd be happy to pay for that new battery." "No preacher should be without a working watch," he said. Now, I share this with you today because it does relate to our scripture passage from Acts chapter 20 as Paul visits the little city of Troas. Troas was a small city in Macedonia, and it is actually named after the ancient city of Troy. It was, in Paul's day, a thriving little settlement, but today, if you go there, there's nothing but ruins and a few oak trees. It is clear that there was also a thriving little church community there. After all, Paul had visited there several times. The story in today's passage is really straightforward, but I gotta tell you, if you ever wonder if there's humor in the Bible, this passage is a clear example. Luke tells us that on this particular trip, Paul went to Troas by way of the Sea of Philippi, and he stayed there about a week. On the first day of the week, which is Sunday, Paul is with the believers in Troas sharing the Lord's Supper, or as it's also referred to often as the breaking of bread. In those days, I need to remind you that whenever they celebrated the Lord's Supper, it probably meant more of a complete meal with the elements of bread and wine taking on new significance. So let me see if I can paint a picture of what happened on this particular Sunday. The church at Troas was gathered in the upper room of a house to worship. That's what the early church did. It was evening time. The room is crowded. And because it is evening time, there are many lamps burning, giving off not only light, but also heat. This is also the Mediterranean, remember. So even the evenings are somewhat warm. In a word, it would have been stifling in that room. These folks would likely also have worked all day and would be very tired. Because Paul knew his time was limited with these folks, he decided, like in the story of our farmer and preacher, to give the church the whole load. In other words, Paul spoke on and on and on. You can almost hear or see Luke's eyes rolling when he talks about this. So it's very warm in that room. It's crowded. And we almost always forget that they haven't eaten yet. And Paul is kind of going on and on and on and on. You will never complain about the length of my sermons again after this story today, I guarantee you. In the gathering of the church in Troas was a young man named Eutychus. And surprise, surprise, he was feeling quite drowsy. We all know how that feels. I once heard someone say or ask someone else why they went to church, and their reply was to get a good sleep. Eutychus doesn't want to be rude and disturb the gathering by actually walking out of the room. Besides, he probably had a genuine interest in hearing what Paul had to say. He just couldn't stay awake. But necessity is the mother of invention. And Eutychus notices that there's a window open in that particular room. And he slips around and sits on the windowsill and sits there listening and trying to keep cool. However, despite his best efforts, Eutychus succumbs to his fatigue. He falls into a deep sleep, which in and of itself is not a terrible thing. But he's in a windowsill three stories up. And sure enough, Eutychus falls out the window and he gets killed. The church is in shock, well, of course. And everyone rushes down to give aid to Eutychus, but he's dead. Here we have proof positive that preaching is a deadly weapon. So no sitting on window ledges here. Then we read that Paul took the young man in his arms, and by the power of God, the man is restored to health. Or to life, excuse me. Good news! Now, what we read next, must admit, I can hardly contain myself from laughing. I really can't. It comes off to me, at least, very funny. Eutychus is all right. So what do? They head back inside to celebrate the Lord's Supper, and this is incredible to me. Paul goes on preaching until dawn. You would think that with the death of Eutychus, that was a sign that maybe the people had enough. But no, Paul has a lot more to say. Where's that offer of a watch battery for Paul? Then the most bizarre sentence in the whole passage, Luke tells us that Eutychus was taken home unhurt, and everyone was greatly relieved. Duh. Well, I guess so. What an odd little story, isn't it? I'm sure that it was the unusual nature of the event that prompted Luke to record it. But what's the point of this story? What's our takeaway? Don't fall asleep in church, lesson one. Watch where you sit in church, lesson two. Air conditioning is necessary equipment for a church, lesson three. And no one should ever preach till dawn, lesson four. I mean, what else is there in this passage? Well, you know, I did a little digging on the internet to see what other preachers had done with this passage, and there were some very creative attempts to try and bring an exhortation out of this passage. Most of them tried to tie this passage as a wake-up call, ironically, for the church, a call to revival. One preacher actually took the text and extrapolated, ironically, a lengthy sermon on why you should go to church. I have no idea how he got there, because the threat of dying isn't a draw for me. As I thought about this passage, I began to wonder why it was even included in our little series that I'm going with you. That is, until I made a couple of observations. The first has to do with the Apostle Paul himself. The week's stay at Troas and the all-night preaching session seems to me to point to a desperation in Paul. I think he sees his time on earth beginning to draw to a close. He says as much in the next chapter to the elders at Ephesus. I sense almost that he's trying too hard. Is it possible he's relying too much on himself and not on God? I say this because we know Paul's desire to go to Jerusalem was like an obsession for him. The Holy Spirit Luke hinted at was actually not behind Paul's overwhelming push to get to Jerusalem. Paul then goes on a kind of a farewell tour through Macedonia, making his way gradually back to Jerusalem. There's a desperation to it. I mean, not even the death of Eutychus slowed him down. I remember a story when Laura and I were serving in Brownsburg, Quebec, our first pastorate. Laura's great uncle, George Baxter, he had been pastor there many years before me. And the story goes that there was one summer evening where Brownsburg had a power outage. I got to tell you, from living there, it happened all the time. And people believe, surely, the evening service would be canceled. Uncle George would have none of it. He ordered some young men from the church to find two very heavy wooden planks. The front doors to the church were propped open, and the pastor drove his car on the church lawn up to the front doors and up the planks so its headlights could illuminate the sanctuary. Now, some may say that's ingenuity. I wonder if it was even necessary at all. Yes, there's an urgency to the gospel, but one wonders. If anyone remembered anything else about that service in Brownsburg, except that car on the ramp. And Troas, the only thing they might have remembered was that Eutychus fell out that window and died. The issue, as I see it, is always quality over quantity in sharing the gospel. I also wonder, in thinking about Paul, how much trust he had in other teachers and other preachers. Yes, I know there were false teachers floating around, but there were also good men like Apollos and Timothy and others who could share the gospel and help people to grow in their faith. And I know this may seem unfair, but sometimes I get the sense that Paul felt that the success of the Christian mission rested on his shoulders. I know that's harsh, but it is the feeling I get when looking at the last few installments of our series. There's a real danger out there in thinking that the gospel depends on us personally. Now, I've personally encountered many wonderful, sincere followers of Jesus who think that if they take a break, if they take a holiday, or heaven forbid, they should retire, the church will implode. That's tragic. What a terrible burden to take on oneself, and an unnecessary one to carry. What happened to Jesus' promises that he will make our burdens light? We are but instruments of the transmission of the message. Jesus said it would be he who built his church. That's Matthew 16, verse 18. All we have to do is introduce people to Jesus. All we have to do is invite them to follow him. We do not need to give them the full load the first time we meet them. The truth is that the church continued to grow and continued to thrive after Paul had been martyred. The church was fully alive before we walked this earth and will be long after we've gone to glory. First Baptist Church is not my church. It's not your church. It's Christ's church. It's his. Troas was not Paul's church, no matter how long he preached. Maybe the people were relieved, not just because Eutychus was all right, but maybe they were also relieved because Paul finally moved on. It's just a thought. The second thing that raised up from this passage for me was a serious question about why we come to worship in the first place. I read recently about an old adage that says, absence makes the heart grow fonder. One minister remarked, there's got to be a lot of people out there that really love the church. I came across an article that a news reporter had put together that asked their readers the question, why I don't go to church. And then the reporter decided to show the weakness of their reasoning by substituting the word church with the word movie. Here's just a sampling of what he got back. One person said, I'm out of the habit of going to the movies. That's why I no longer attend. Another wrote, I know a man who's gone to the movies for years and he's no better than I am. And still another wrote, I stay away from the movies because I went as a child. And another finally wrote, there are just as many good people outside of the movies as there are inside. Can you see how that reasoning is absurd? Even when we use the word church in them. Now, it might be helpful to ask why people don't come, but I want to ask a more important question today. Why do we come? Why do we bother? Why did the people of Troas endure a stuffy upper room and Paul's long-winded sermon? Why do you nice people come week after week to this place? And please don't try to inflate my ego by telling me it's because I'm here. I know our motives have got to be deeper than that. So what are our reasons? Well, honestly, maybe we're not sure why we come. At least some Sundays. Some of us may come some weeks just out of habit. Because maybe there's nothing else interesting to do. Oh, there's got to be more than that. Why did the folks at Troas and Ephesus and Corinth and Philippi and all those other early churches make such an effort to gather together week after week? You know, later on, our brothers and sisters in the faith actually took to meeting in catacombs or tombs to avoid persecution. Why would they risk their life and limb to meet? Well, Luke tells us some of the reasons, and Paul adds others in his letters, but there's one that stands out in today's passage. It reads, on the first day of the week, we gathered to observe the Lord's Supper. In today's church, we use the words communion or Eucharist. What was it about breaking bread together that was so important that even after Eutychus died, they went right back inside to celebrate the Lord's Supper? Well, to answer that, think about our own families. What's the focal point of almost every family celebration that you've ever had? A meal. I've mentioned in the past, and Mom's here today, that in my family, sharing a meal is a big deal. It takes planning and preparation. My mom is the one who always writes a list to check the things off. Why is a meal so important at a family event? Whether it's sit down or a backyard barbecue. Well, besides eating delicious food and what else happens around that table? We interact, we share, we swap stories, we pass on family news and traditions, all whether we realize it or not, as we eat together, we are strengthening our family bond. The family that eats together stays together. Sharing food and drink is the medium over which we relate. When you want to meet with someone socially, what do? You invite them to come for lunch or maybe out for a coffee. And let's be honest, the food and drink are really irrelevant. It's the conversation that's valuable, isn't it? The early church, coming out of a Middle Eastern culture, recognized the value of breaking bread, as did Jesus when he gave it a brand new meaning. The church comes together to break bread, not just around the communion table, but in the coffee times and the aisle before and after the service. It's the bread and the cup, the word and the sermons, the hymns, the prayers that we share provide us opportunity to strengthen our bonds with each other and our bond with Christ. If we don't come to church to worship or break bread, we have no idea what's going on in the lives of our brothers and sisters. Nor do they know what's going on in our lives. It's not about news, but rather it's all about being the body of Christ. The reason the believers in Troas could sit all night listening to Paul wasn't because they had comfortable pews. It was because they listened together. They shared the bread and the experience. Read again the last phrase of the lesson today. What was said when Eutychus was okay? Everyone was greatly relieved. Everyone. They cared for each other. They helped each other. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 12, famous words, when one suffers, we all suffer. When one rejoices, we all rejoice. Whether the sermons are 5 minutes or 5 hours is irrelevant, really, as long as we love each other and we know that we're in this together. So why do we come? Same reasons the believers in Troas came. They came because this was their family. It's like a story I read about an older gentleman who, although he was almost totally deaf, still walked to church every Sunday morning for worship. And one day his neighbor stopped and said, "Why are you going to church every day when you can't hear a thing?" The old man responded, "Yeah, I know I can't hear, but they love me, and I feel at home there." The people of Troas felt they were loved, felt they were at home, even in that stuffy upper room. They came no matter what. They even sat through an all-night preaching session together. They felt at home there. Do you feel at home here? Honestly? Why or why not? Have you shared your concerns with others? And then let me ask you this. How have you made others feel like this is their home? Do you cherish those who come and break bread with you? Do you even know their names? We are God's family. That is why we come. Not because of tradition or habit or heaven help because of the preacher. We come because we are Christ's body.